Hello everybody, and welcome to another one of our Monday videos. It turns out to be a bit bi-weekly at the moment, but we'll try and get these out as often as we can.
Yeah, I suppose that's better than like just not doing them at least.
Yeah, we seem to have crowded weeks and fallow weeks, although we have had there was a stream last week, and there will be an article again on Tuesday to get the shilling in there early.
No, well.
I'm hoping, like I said, to do a videos Monday, article Tuesday, seal of approval Wednesday, although Rose has been a bit ill because she had the coof jab. Don't get the coof jab, guys. And, you know, the normal stream on Thursday and then, like, maybe other people's streams on Friday.
Well, I will be on British Night stream with Trig this Tuesday.
Oh, right, okay, that's pretty good. So we've got a double day there. But yeah, that's not what we're talking about today. Today isn't just about the shilling.
No, it's not.
It's something you sent me, actually, about a reheated Bush-era policy.
Yes.
That's been readopted by the Biden administration with much fanfare.
Yeah, that just fires off my economic autism alarm, and it's like, wee-oo, wee-oo, wee-oo.
Well, it's very obvious what's going on, because it's like, a lot of people seem to acknowledge that we're at this, like, normal stage of up-ramp towards a housing crisis, but no one seems to want to do a damn thing about it.
Well, I think maybe it's worth sort of bringing it up as a bit of a kind of background thing to what we're discussing here, in the way that it's, you know, much like it was back then, as we will get into, there are policies being at least talked about in the framing of racial wealth gap closing to really just perpetuate a housing bubble.
It is, yeah, and it's the same things we've talked about previously with the boom bust stuff and the whole cycle of when we talked about the Keynesianism stream stuff. But this is the article that kind of spurned the whole thing on. It's a Politico article simply just called "Fight Looms Over Down Payment Aid to Close Racial Wealth Gap." They're really pushing the race angle with this one.
Mm. Well, that's it's just indicative of all governance when things go sideways and just race politics of any variety.
Yeah, and it's not more or less racial, really, than the Bush era policy that inspired it. We'll get into that in a sec, but we'll have a quick look through this. It says $10 billion proposal from House Financial Services. Maxine Waters would give home buyers up to $25,000 each for a down payment, which, it sounds extreme, but that's already, as we'll get to later, again, it's already happening here in the UK in some places. Again, $10 billion, I think, is about three times what the original Bush era one was as well.
Something along the lines, yeah. You know, as they say, $10 billion proposal by House Financial Services. Give home buyers up to $25,000 for a down payment. President Joe Biden's top housing official, the HUD secretary, something that will come up again later,
yeah,
says such assistance is a priority for the administration, which is essentially them admitting that if they want to perpetuate the housing bubble into the next presidency,
yeah,
that they have to throw as much money as they can at it and fully turn the spigot up.
Well, she's also called Marcia Fudge, which sounds like a character from Matilda or something. Like, a lot of these people have either, like, fictional-sounding names or very, let's say, international finance names.
Oof.
But that,
yeah, so your option is Dickens or...
Yeah, it's like Wuzzleworth von Fudgington or, you know...
Snodgrass.
Yes, no. Or your name is, like, actually Herschel Goldbergstein. It's one of the other guys, if you want to be
that or Irish,
like, yeah, that or Irish. But, well, I don't know. It's let's not get into, you know, the mixpiracy. It's being framed here,
and
as
that's
some...
actually quite based, to be honest, the line of the rush to put families in homes they can't afford. Oofed. Someone's spoken a little bit too much truth there.
The thing is, it's rich, again, coming from a Republican, though.
No, that is very true.
It's quite funny that they take turns doing this.
Well, that's the game, isn't it?
It is the big game, yes. But it's framed as this radical policy that will, you know, reignite the housing market. And it's also framed explicitly frontline, as we talked about, in a racial way.
Mm.
But
That makes it so much more acceptable to the leftist establishment. And you need not question any aspect of it, because it's for the good of the minorities, comrade.
Yes.
And then furthermore, from the right, they then critique it about, well, why aren't white people getting money for houses?
Yes.
And totally ignoring the fact that, like, no one should be getting money for their house in the first place from the government.
It is the headline itself and the way it's being framed is a great example of how racial policy is used to mask the realities of economic policy.
Yes.
And that all people are talking about and will be talking about with a lot of this is the racial aspect, rather than talking about how this is essentially a one-for-one reheat of the Bush era policy, yeah. which we just have here, which is quite... There's an archived, like, White House of President of George W. Bush... Which is great.
It's very internet 2.0.
It is very internet. Well, it's like it says here, historical material frozen in time, but this is framed in the manner of the Bush administration celebrating its own accomplishments, as we'll come to here. Like it just goes on to say it here, but here's what the Bush administration had to say about housing, because you know they're talking about U.S. homeownership rates, not ownership. I'm abbreviating too much there. But the second point here, the president set a goal to increase the number of minority homeowners by 5.5 million families by the end of the decade.
That's just the exact same thing. Well, the thing is, that includes pledges to provide more than $1.1 trillion in mortgage purchases for minority home buyers within the decade.
Yeah, that's...
Oof.
That's massive. That is absolutely massive and kind of dwarfs that 10 billion figure quoted earlier. Although that's probably like total yield in terms of...
Well, this is actually... Yeah, that was actually a bigger... Because of what? 200 million per year, 40,000 families each year. That's 50 Gs a family on average?
Yes. Yes.
So that's just $200 million per year thrown at liquidity in the housing market to keep it afloat.
Yeah, it was. If anything, the Biden administration and Maxine Waters is offering a slightly tamer version, but it is still the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's why, because it will get introduced, or it will be proposed now, but by the time it's introduced, it will be $100,000 per family or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
As has already happened in Scotland.
And here we talked about the zero down payment initiative again, which we're seeing a lot more of.
Mm.
The here in the UK and in Scotland especially, there's a huge thing about families not having to put down payments, zero deposit mortgages,
yeah.
You know, 95 and 100% mortgages. Ugh. That's what those are.
Yeah.
They are zero down payment mortgages. Yeah, 150,000 new homeowners talking about, and yeah, the self-help ownership opportunity program. This isn't even going into some of the other Bush era initiatives.
Well, I think what's even funnier though is that retrospectively, this is then looked at from organizations like the New York Times as a market failure in a certain sense.
Well, okay, there's even in 2008, a lot of the mainstream media. It's an archive link, so it's slightly messed up. But they were admitting that the bus driver home ownership fueled the housing bubble. But they go on to basically repeat the same line about... where does it say about... it's not showing it. Yeah. It basically says... the conviction that markets do best when left alone...
Yes, and the line under that, but his housing policies and hands-off approach to regulation covers lax lending standards, which, as you pointed out when we first looked at this, is just a completely self-contradictory statement.
Yeah, it is. It's you can't have, you know, actual laissez-faire politics and actual laissez-faire policies whilst also intervening in the market and having a policy.
Yeah.
You'd have to have no policy to have a laissez-faire policy. But it was acknowledged at the time that schemes like this, that schemes like are being proposed by the Biden administration, are part of what massively overheated the housing market there. And that's not even really getting into the... What was it called? I think it's the American Dream.
Yes, it was. The American Dream Acquisition Act or something along those. It says on the top of the other page.
Yes, it's not really coming up here. But yeah, it's one of the headlining kind of initiatives that the Bush administration brought in that really, really did horrendously overheat the market. And as we can see here, it's not something that's unique. The Scottish government has something called the First Home Fund, which is meant to, you know, provide first time buyers up to £25,000. It's the same figure. Basically,
it's a fair bit more given the conversion rate.
Well, okay, yeah. But it's 25,000 unit economic units.
Mm. But the contention that I have explicit with this kind of policy is that this so blatantly fuels the boom.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the principle here is that you're quote unquote making homes relatively cheaper for people, but what you're actually doing is setting up a scheme where people who can show that they have no money by funneling it away in somebody else's bank account can, in effect, then take advantage of this £25,000 and get an extra £25,000 towards a house.
Yeah.
And, you know, this assumption here is that those selling homes aren't aware of this.
No.
When they clearly are. And the first thing I would do if I was someone that was, you know, selling a home in this period and I was told that people would be getting a free £25,000 towards a down payment, is I would add 25 grand to what I'm asking for that, you know.
Yeah, so we flubbed that a second ago, but it's the American Dream Down Payment Act.
Mm.
That was the 200 million a year, which is a lot. That's a lot of money.
It's the same principle there, though. You know, you're giving American families an extra 50 grand to put towards a house, presuming that for some reason people that sell houses aren't going to add that 50 grand on their end.
Well, like I said off air, it's a case of we're not going to readjust the housing market to be more affordable. We're going to give people free money to afford the inflated housing.
Yeah, they are terrified of a market correction, so much so that they are willing to throw, you know, in the Bush case, literal trillions of dollars at the market.
It's, yeah, literal trillions. 200 million a year, good luck. It's just, it's amazing the figures that went on here. But that's not the only mechanism. That's like the surface level kind of direct policy stuff.
That is the stuff that keeps people within the illusion of they are actually being helped by this stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas there are a number of managerial institutions in relation to the HUD that was mentioned before. Where I think, as you had mentioned previously, that, you know, out of doing this, that some folk were making an absolute killing in the process of setting all this stuff up.
Well, the mechanism by which all of this was kind of controlled, it's the same now, but it was very famous under the Bush administration when people talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. These are not private organisations. They play like a game of okey-cokey in terms of being part of the government or not. Because, not to get into the complete history of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but Fannie Mae was set up first, then Freddie Mac came in later. Fannie Mae is like it's a New Deal era initiative. And Freddie Mac, hilariously, was set up in 1970, just before the abandonment of the gold standard. But that was meant to also be, they basically decided to reinvent Fannie Mae as another more governmental organisation, because they pretended to sell Fannie Mae off and make it a bit more private. Basically what they do is they are responsible for packaging a lot of the mortgages into kind of fiduciary products, into it's the secondary market they use it on. So they turn them into securities.
The money markets, essentially.
Yes. Freddie Mac explicitly, there's a great kind of little line here, if I can actually...
Yeah, it's just down at the bottom of the history.
I can find it, yeah. It's in 1995, Freddie Mac began receiving affordable housing credit for buying subprime securities. And by 2004, the HUD, the same organization we just talked about there, under Bush this time, though, suggested the company was lagging behind and should do more.
Yeah, the government planners have decided that you should pick up more bad and toxic financing via our free money that we will give you because reasons.
Well, it's really a way of showing that through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and through the frontline surface level policies of the government, then leaning on them through the existing institutions, they were able to essentially have a direct accelerator to the housing market.
Yeah.
They were able to control the rate at which house prices went up pretty much directly.
Yeah.
They control the mechanism, and they control, crucially, they control the instruments of the secondary market. People, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, were responsible for the financial products and, you know, buying and selling the financial products that were the packaged subprime mortgages.
Mm-hmm. The collateralized debt obligations. And
yes.
All essentially different financial institutions betting on making money on set predestined program set by the Housing and Urban Developments Department.
In fact, Freddie Mac, as invented in the 1970s, was explicitly to make more complex financial products out of the housing market to fuel the sale of mortgages.
Well, as a sort of general phenomenon that can be seen in all markets, but very much so in the housing market, that the more interest rates lower and the more inflated money is entered into the market, that you need a more roundabout process to sort of, one, hide the inflation, and two, to get away with making a profit.
Well, the entire reason that the government came in and put Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae under the conservatorship was because they really were just, you know, they're government-sponsored enterprise.
Mm.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
And it's a joke to say that the failure of these two institutions was a market failure, because they are directly linked to housing policy and instruments of housing policy.
Yeah.
Again, it mentioned the low-income housing tax credit, and that is something that builders and, you know, lenders and renters get for acquiring, constructing, and rehabilitating of affordable rental housing. But crucially, what someone like Freddie Mac got was they managed to get a affordable housing credit for buying subprime securities.
Yeah, so not even physical houses, but mortgage packages that keep the houses at an inflated price.
Yes.
Via shuffling money back and forth between investment banks.
So if you are buying subprime mortgages as packaged by someone like Freddie Mac, what's happening is they end up at discounted rates.
Yes.
What they're doing is basically...
Well, to you, the financial elite, they yes. are at discounted rates.
Yes, they are. But it really was the thing that fueled subprime as the core package of these mortgage bundles,
mm.
because they were able to be sold at a reduced rate because the government was doubly subsidising them. It was subsidising them directly by giving people these loans, and it was subsidising them on the back end by giving people a tax credit for dealing with them directly and dealing with them indirectly.
Whilst at the same time you've got all this liquidity sloshing out because interest rates lowering up the entire time as well.
Yes, it's just this massive, like... It's like, no matter where you look, there's whammies. It's not even like a double or a triple whammy.
It's just whammies all the way up and all the way down.
It's just a big stack of whammies, my friend. This is probably a good time to talk about a little bit of the sticky financial terminology here. We can talk about the fact that through this, they become a form of fiduciary media.
Or they become a producer of fiduciary yeah. media and a distributor of it in regards to the fact that they funnel around things that quote-unquote have monetary value but that ultimately have no relation to production or a goods market or
no.
a real increase in the demand for money because efficient products have allowed people to increase their output via buying new resources or something like that. You know, there is nothing in regards to economic innovation or economic development in any real sense that is related to this influx of money. And that's why it's, you know, you can refer to it as fiduciary media, because it's not money that me and you are changing hands because we, you know, we make bread or we make pizzas or something, you know, as you would have in any economics example. It's money for money's sake that just gets thrown around, and it never really comes into the fold of anyone normal. And the only time it really touches face with anything we see in the real world is in the housing market, through things like the Cantillon effect, as we have discussed previously in the Keynes stream.
Yeah, it's what's happening here as well is you are going to get a class of people who are gaining advantage through what amounts to roundabout printed money.
Yeah, well, this is the, you know, the idea that, you know, is it something like 96% of, I think it was 1.96% of the money in the British economy was this fiduciary media.
Yes.
Only 4% of it was physical cash and physical savings. The rest of it is just numbers on a screen that people who work at institutions that you will never get into make a stonking off in interests.
Well, again, it's an example as well of just, it's printing money without printing money. You're printing mortgages, effectively.
Well, yes, it's like, you know, it's is the, you know, fraction reserve banking to a certain extent is only the tip of the iceberg once you begin to understand how, you know, as we described, all the money markets work. You know, if this idea a bank gets £1,000 and they can lend out £9,000 is ridiculous. That's nothing compared to what these folk are up to. And meanwhile, at the same time, they aren't just inflating the money supply, they're buggering the housing market, they're buggering the mortgage market. And at the same time, you know, they know fair well what they're up to, and they're getting stinking filthy rich off it.
Well, it's not to get too much into the 2008 crisis, but the way it worked in Florida was that a lot of people were applying for these housing schemes. They were essentially signing up homeless people.
Mm.
They were getting £25,000 on or $25,000, sorry, on properties that were worthless in terms of deposit, and they were giving these people 0% mortgages. Basically on zero, they were paying very, very low interest rates.
Yeah.
So you get someone who was paying maybe $100 a month for a home.
And then they rent it for $1,000.
Yes.
Mm.
And
they do this again and again and again and again and again.
Yes, they do. All what
or you sublet.
Yeah, or you sublet. Or you sign someone up to buy worthless property who accepts government money to get it, just to get a roof over their head.
Yes, and that is all possible at a low level because these people at a high level want to play around with these things. And the government gives them free rein and the unaccountability via constant liquidity to do so.
Well, the effect, as we will see here, is that we are in the midst of another bubble.
Yes.
The policy we're talking about is kind of the tip of the iceberg. They can put the accelerator on as much as they want through the existing...
Well, things like the, you know, the cancellation of evictions, the no foreclosures, no defaults on mortgages and stuff like that going through at the moment via all the lockdown policy, is very conveniently not allowed this bubble to pop yet.
It has. And they again, just through their housing policy and through altering just how, you know, agencies enforce things or how agencies look at things or assess things, they can very much change the way the housing market works. Never mind proposing, you know, $10 trillion worth of direct mortgage credit. As we can see here in the UK, the average house price for 2021, this is the big bubble here, has gone up massively. You've seen just like a massive spike there.
But yeah, this is during a period where economic activity has pretty much slowed right down to a halt.
Yes.
There should be no reason why this has actually happened other than the fact that money has been thrown at the market. And they even tried to do things, you know, like lowering the stamp duty tax and all sorts of stuff. I mean, as we've seen in the local area we're in, everything's for sale.
Everything is for sale or sold, weirdly enough. There's been a huge change of hands of property at the moment.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who are investing in it because they don't know what else to do with their money. And they don't know where else their money will be safe. But the problem is a huge amount of people have now invested in a housing market at its height.
Yes.
So we're going to have negative equity in a very short order in this country.
Well, we can see in this graph that, you know, there is the peak and then trough following, you know, the climb to 2007, 2008 as it crashes down into 2009, 2010.
It's tiny.
But since then...
Compared to what
We don't know where it comes from below there just yet. But we can see that the average house price in the last 10 years has gone up by, what, 90 grand?
Yeah.
And that is purely a product of quantitative easing, government policy for new home buyers, banks being given free credit for new home initiatives and all these sort of things. And it has nothing to do with the market. You know, if... What we should really be seeing if, you know, they hadn't done QE and all these things is that from 2009 onwards, the house price would have crashed continuously until there was an actual correction at the point at which the average person could buy a house again.
Well, the house price since 2009, and especially since, 2012, has gone up by more than 50%. It's like 70%. But you should be able to tell that this is a ridiculous bubble because average earnings haven't gone up that much.
No, exactly. That's my point. I think average earnings between sort of like say 2012 and 2021 is something like 26.5 to maybe 28.5, 29 grand.
Yeah, it depends on local area, but yeah.
That is not, let's put it this way, it's not at least a 50% increase.
No, in real terms, even since the 2008 financial crisis, you know, wages have been relatively flat.
Yes, I mean, if we were to put these things over inflation, you would actually see a very flat trend for wages, whereas housing real prices would actually be increasing ever so slightly.
Yes, they would be. They'd be increasing over that. And this is purely due to the production of fiduciary media, as we've seen, because people are poorer and yet house prices are rising.
Yes. And that's not how it works.
No, that's not how a market works. Well, you see that big spike there. That is that's nearly like I think it's a 25 grand spike in the past, you know, 6 months basically, which is that's 10% of the value of a house. It's pretty ridiculous. But yeah, this is what's happening right now. Here we can see an example of what happened. I think this was during the US financial crisis, quote unquote.
So like post-dot-com bubble crash.
Yeah.
You know, there is an 80% average increase in price between then and the height of the housing bubble then.
Yeah.
Which then crashes again to roughly 2012 at 40% above the 2000 price and then jumps back up to the same values 2007, 2008.
At almost the same rate.
Yeah, it's not far off the same graph.
Yeah, it's slightly slower and it's slightly wigglier.
I mean, this one would probably look diabolical if you could get 2021 on there, but funnily enough, you can't find those statistics.
It's very difficult to get a hold of contemporary US house prices. Everything after like 2016 seems to be missing, especially when it comes to historic stuff. If any of you guys have it, do link it to me and let me know, but I cannot find valuable data on 2021 US house prices. It just does not exist because the evictions freeze and the moving freeze is just the market doesn't exist in real terms.
No, there is no market. Even in regards to this stuff during the 2008 crash, the lead up to that is very much a case of there not really being anything that signifies a quote unquote market existing.
No, but this is an example of, again, from 2012 onwards, we had the start of another bubble, and that bubble hasn't popped yet.
No.
And it's just being added to.
Well, that's, the trillions of dollars of QE and all sorts of ridiculous stuff that keeps financial institutions afloat is part of the reason why this has continued. I mean, we can even see across a longer trend. I believe, is this the one for the US?
This is the US, yes, because it has 9/11 on it.
Oh, God. Apologies, what are the odds?
Yeah, apologies for these being slightly low res. I could not find high-res versions of these. But again, this is a slightly longer trend, and this shows that things didn't. I don't know. I think this is a slightly different graph, but things didn't fully recover.
Is this a sort of percentage growth kind of graph?
I'm not sure, actually. I like I said, I couldn't find exactly the right one. But it might use a slightly different measure. And yes, I think this is actually a percentage growth. Graph rather than a real terms growth.
So this would be, and that is maybe worth suggesting to people that this is year on year growth.
Yes.
So that stage between 97 to 2007 is maybe 99-2000 is consistent, compound growth year on year, which is something that will, come apparent again a later piece that we've got. But you can also see the same effect in the UK.
Yeah, it is.
On a longer trend. You have, not really too much going on up until, funnily enough, Thatcher gave everyone a mortgage in the early mid-80s, and all of a sudden the house prices do absolute gangbusters.
Well, you
can
see that the bubble from the mid-90s right up until the 2008 crisis...
Yes.
...is huge, and it's huge compared to where we are now. But what we've seen is a massive shoot up to possibly above those levels. 2019, things start to cool off a bit, but we've not seen a return of, a stable price, really.
Well, anyone that understands exponential relationships in mathematics will look at that cumulative 2.9% per annum figure and lose their mind.
Yeah.
When they really, because that is absurd at the end of the day. I mean, I think if this graph went further back into the 50s and the 60s, it would look even more ridiculous. I think you'd find that year-on-year growth would probably be even higher.
Yes, it would be. But it's wages haven't gone up like that, and it's actually tracking above quote-unquote inflation. Even though I think the house price is one of the greatest indicators of how much money is actually worth.
I suppose that would really be the case if it wasn't for the fact that so much of the money involved in purchasing a house isn't actually real.
That's true as well. But it's kind of the comparative cost of getting housing.
Yes.
What
it is, though, at the end of the day, is due to the nature of the way that property acts within the economy as one of the first places money funnels into when it comes from the government spigot, as it becomes a great predictor for crashes.
Yeah.
And as we have sort of talked about here, we aren't really the first people to do this, nor are we doing this in the first time frame, really. I mean, there is a fantastic speech that we have a transcript for by Peter Schiff.
Yes, well,
from, I believe, some sort of mortgage brokers conference in 2006,
yeah,
where he talks about the perspective people had in regards to their own housing, and that they seemed to think almost in a deterministic sense that, their houses were going to appreciate 20% a year, and that there was no need to work anymore because they owned a home and the equity year on year, even though they never understood really how it worked,
yeah,
was going to keep them afloat.
The problem is that they were told this, and they were told this by mortgage lenders and brokers.
Yes.
And they were essentially winked and nodded at by the government to this effect as well.
There was also this secondary point there, that those that were aware of this and were making, you know, say they did make on average an extra $20,000 a year because of the appreciation of their house, they were making small fries compared to the mortgage brokers that told them about this stuff.
Yes, because they got commission, and those guys, you know, they actually got their money.
Yeah.
Their money wasn't related to the actual value of other people's houses.
They didn't have to borrow against the equity of their house every 2 years to release the quote-unquote equity.
No, they didn't.
Which means that ultimately by the time you get to 2007, 2006, you have people who maybe could have remortgaged their house 3 times over the last 15 years, and fair enough, they made $80,000 in that process, but at the same time, they are now borrowing against a house that might have been $160,000, but is now $400,000.
Yes, and they think that they have that in assets.
Yes.
Again, it becomes, you start to realise that once people think they can exchange the fictitious value of their home for genuine goods and money, and they get in the mindset that, one, it's still going to be there and always going to increase, that they start to do incredibly perverse financial transactions and make incredibly perverse financial decisions.
Yes, you were talking about the boomers and their sacred 401ks and their sacred equity portfolios from the sort of the 50s and the 60s onward in the stream we had last week. You know, it is exactly this mindset that they are all going to get filthy, stinking rich off of something that the government's doing for the elites.
It is,
and they allow it to happen, and to some extent they don't just allow it to happen, they make sure it happens because they want to make their little bit on the side too.
Well, through things like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the tax credits, all of this leaning on the market, they are the engineers of it, and they know that this will eventually lead to a boom and a bust. But what happens with a housing crisis, what happens with these booms and busts, is they exploit both aspects of it. They take credit for the boom, and when the bust happens, they say, we need more control to deal with this.
And then they come in and quote-unquote save us all by buying up the property at pennies on the pound compared to what they were asking people to borrow for it before.
Yes, and what happens is there is never actually a real adjustment.
No.
They say that a real adjustment will be too painful if we just leave this to the reality of the market. You know, basically everyone will die.
Yeah.
So we have to come in, we have to rebuy it, and you'll see that there's...
It's the inflationist mindset.
It is.
And what that happens is it compounds and compounds and compounds into something that is inevitably going to be a crash, the likes of which we have never seen before.
No, it's like constantly remortgaging a house.
Because at what point does the average house in Britain actually become 7 figures? I mean, considering the fact it's cumulative percentage increases, and, you know, we have gone from under 200 grand house prices in 2013 to over 250 grand. You know, that's, you know, 70 grand increase there. That's what, you know, as you said, nearly 50%. If we were to see cumulative 50% increases across 5 and 6 year periods, I mean, we're talking £500,000 houses in the next, you know, decade.
Well, if you were to win £260,000 tomorrow, that feels like an almost, you know, it's not quite a life changing amount of money, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
But all you've won is the price of an average house, and that should, you know, if you sat and looked at your bank account and saw £260,000 there, would you think that all that represented was a 3-bed semi-detached that was actually a tiny bit shabby?
Uh-huh.
If you look, like...
The double glazing might be alright, but the roofs are a bit shoddy.
And we're talking, like, maybe, like, a slightly nicer suburb of Birmingham or something like that. We're not talking London prices.
Yeah.
We're not talking countryside. We're not talking somewhere desirable.
The average price does include...
Oh, it does include London, yeah, but look at anywhere that has, quote-unquote, nicer housing. You are going to pay £300,000 for anything that's a decent 3-bed.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It is, but you have to think about it in those terms. You have to think about the fact that the price of property is not affordable, and they have to jump through so many hoops to get people living in these houses, that at what point does reality reassert itself and people just go, these are things we can never afford?
The thing is, we can't ever for certain say that, but what we can say is that for the longer this continues, that moment of reality putting the brakes on all this is going to be all the more powerful and all the more damaging.
Well, not to get into too much of the stuff we'll get into far later, but it also brings into sharp focus people's over-reliance on technology and learned helplessness.
Yes.
In that this is all going to pop at some point. You know, this is all going to go away at some point. And when it does, are people going to be able to survive?
Yeah, our dependency will be our downfall.
Yes, and it's a point of that, you know, you can appreciate the fact that your house has gone up in value, but it's not reality.
No.
You're being given monopoly money by a government, essentially.
Monopoly money by the monopoly.
Yes, you're being given monopoly money by the monopoly, and you are not a financial genius for the fact that you bought a house in 1965.
And sold it in 2005.
Yeah, and you know that does not make you a financial genius.
You are not Alan Sugar.
No, you are someone who had their face pressed to the money printer and was trying to like shovel as much in your mouth as possible. But yeah, that's kind of the point I'm going to make here. Again, Peter Schiff is one of the people who quite famously predicted a lot of the housing market crash stuff.
Well, he was more than cognizant at the time of the fact that ultimately the point we're trying to make here is this is just a small aspect of a much, much bigger phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the most simplistic ways that people can wrap their head around it without having to have a massive understanding of economics.
It's, in a real sense, the tip of the financial iceberg. It's the bit you can see.
Mm.
And what happens underneath is even more kind of appalling and abhorrent. It's like it's very much the Margaritaville episode of South Park.
Yes.
Possibly one of the better explanations of the financial crisis that has ever been made in popular media.
Yeah, other than Peter Schiff and stuff on the Mises Institute.
Yes. But, yeah, talking about popular media.
And that heart.
Anyway, guys, that's kind of a minor kind of aspect of some of the stuff we're talking about, but it is something quite interesting, and I thought it was worth talking about, because when it happens, we're going to be able to point to this and go, see?
Told you so.
Yeah,
it's like, we can be those people.
Yeah, the Obama administration bailed out the banks, and then the Biden administration came in, and with all good intentions, lent people money to buy homes, but then there was another financial crash, and of course this contributes towards it, but...
This is Trump's rampant marketism.
Yeah, it was Trump's marketism and the market failure. We'll have all that again. You can see the script laid out before you. It's one of those kind of instances, but it's nice to take a step back and have a look and show we're on the upswing now of a horrendous looming housing crash and,
correction, if you will,
yeah, and financial crisis, which the the Western interventionist governments will come in and pretend to rescue us from again. It's going to happen. And then you can see the script taking shape, because they have one for one copied a policy. It is exactly, these are exactly the same thing. They really, really are.
I suppose that's pretty much everything, though, there.
Yeah. Thank you guys for watching. As always, there are ways to support us below. Obviously, joining the channel is the best way. We'll have our normal stream on Thursday. We are actually doing the totalitarian special this time, guys. It's now 2 weeks overdue. We had that that nice kind of interview with Mr. Aquinas. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed having him on here. It was a nice discussion. And yeah, thanks guys for bearing with us, and we'll hope to make these as regular as possible.
See you next time.